This week's episode of the New in Chess podcast features a narration from The Essential Sosanko, a collection of chess portraits based on personal stories authored by chess grandmaster Genna Sosanko. This episode is the first in a two-part story about late Soviet grandmaster Semyon Abramovich Furman, who was best known as the formative coach for future world chess champion Anatoly Karpov.
Semyon Furman, 1920 to 1978. You ask the questions. The tournament at Wikensee in 1977 went very well for me. I led right from the first round, and only by winning his last game did Geller manage to finish level with me. Observing my games, sceptically but approvingly pursing his lips and shaking his head, he said, "A spitting image of Sioma. It's immediately evident. The Leningrad school, it was he who taught one should play this way in the centre." Geller had in mind Semyon Abramovich Furman, essentially my only trainer. At the Pioneer's Palace, I did not have a permanent trainer. And so, when in the autumn of 1959, in the Shigorin Club, the possibility arose of studying with Furman, the decision made itself. It was a small group, three or four pupils, and it existed for some 2 years. During one of the first sessions, he said, "You should not ask me what you can find in opening books. That would be a waste of time." We made a thorough analysis of various positions, usually from the opening or the pre-middle game, but the main attention was devoted to an analysis of our own games, first and foremost those we had lost. One day, after spending more than an hour analysing one of my games, when it appeared that all was now clear, we reached the final position where the game had been agreed drawn. The ending was as follows: 4 pawns against 3 on the king side, with a separate passed pawn for black on the queen side, although I, playing white, had the 2 bishops against my opponent's bishop and knight. "You know," said Furman, "in this final position you have an advantage, and a considerable one." We began analysing. Unexpectedly, black's passed pawn became weak, and then it was altogether lost. The white king infiltrated into the enemy position, and the 2 bishops became rampant. I can still see the characteristic raising of the eyebrows and the glance from under his spectacles when I showed him one of my games. "Interesting," said Sioma. "Who did you get this idea from?" Although I swore that I had thought it all up at the board, he insisted, "That may be so, but all the same, in your subconscious, there remained a game seen earlier, played by one of the classics." In my eyes, he was an old man, which was probably aided by his appearance, grey and balding, which increased with age, although, to be honest, I did not even think about his age. Anyone older than 30 seemed to me to be already elderly. At that time, Sioma was 39 years old. He was born on December 1, 1920, in Pinsk, in Belarusia, where the percentage of the Jews in towns and villages was traditionally high. His widow, Alla Furman, remembers, "Sioma's parents spoke Yiddish, and he himself understood it, but no Jewish festivals or traditions were observed in the family. Sioma was also not a party member, although he was pressed to join, and many of his tournaments and foreign trips did not take place precisely because of that." In 1931, the family moved to Leningrad, and slightly later, chess came into his life. He was a pupil of Ilya Rabinovich, a strong master of positional style. After finishing school, Sioma did not take his studies any further and started work as a fitter in a factory. Chess then engrossed him entirely. Furman's natural creative growth was delayed by the war. When he became a master, he was 25 years old, middle-aged by the standards of today's chess players. Speaking about those times, Mark Taimanov recalled, "Sioma and I were linked by many years of joint work, regular, everyday work. We had different approaches to chess, and we found it hard to reach an agreement. We studied largely the opening, as those were the years when the basis of modern theory was only just being laid. Problematic positions arose in virtually every game and in many openings. Sioma had an excellent memory, but he never contented himself with it, trying to delve into everything himself with his own analytical work. There were days when our analyses dragged out until midnight, but the following morning he would again be at my place. Sioma was very stubborn. Often our searchings reached deep into the endgame. All the variations we checked very carefully, and we recorded them in thick notebooks, accompanied for clarity with diagrams drawn by hand. I have kept these notebooks, and even today I still fish out from them variations that have not lost their topicality. Sioma was a simple and uneducated person. He never studied anywhere after school. He was certainly no intellectual, but he was a very devoted friend, and although he did not have a lot to say, he had a very good sense of humour. During USSR championships and other tournaments to which we had to travel, we often lived in the same hotel room. It was like that for many years.
You love chess? Why don't you try New in Chess? With readers in 116 countries, New in Chess is the premier chess magazine in the world. What will you get? Exciting chess games explained by the best experts in a clear and accessible way. On-the-spot reports of the biggest events. Top-notch instruction. Independent journalism. Chess history that comes to life. And great interviews. New in Chess, the way you want it. The beautifully produced paper edition or the digital edition for phone, tablet or PC. Give it a try. Go to our website newinchess.com/magazine for more information about subscriptions and special offers.
In the USSR Championships, Furman made his debut in 1948. And immediately achieved a major success when he finished in third place. Just three rounds before the end, he was leading with Kotov, and only a weak finish prevented him from creating a complete sensation. That same year, Botvinnik became world champion, Keres was joining the world's elite, and the remarkable Bronstein was already vividly conspicuous. Boleslavski was then not only a wonderful theoretician, but also a player of the highest class. Smyslov already belonged to the top. A few years later, Petrosian, Geller, Taimanov and Averbakh entered the world arena, and immediately after them came the representatives of the new wave, Spassky, Korshnoi, Tal and Stein. This list is by no means complete. Sioma regularly played in the USSR championships, but not once was he able to emulate that first result. Furman won games against practically all of the above. They all, sitting down at the board, had to reckon with the high standard of his play. Officially, he became a grandmaster only at the age of 45. Today, at this age, many are already concluding their chess careers. With white, Furman practically always began the game with one d4, occasionally resorting to one c4 or one knight f3, whereas with black, he played many openings, avoiding, however, those that lacked a solid centre, such as the Grünfeld, Pirtz, or the Aliakin defences, and Indian setups. With Furman, the right of the first move was a weapon of enormous penetrative power. He was especially successful in positions with a spatial advantage and central play, often developing such pressure that even the strongest players in the world were unable to escape from his clutches. But strong though Furman the player was, he was inferior to Furman the theoretician, who was, without doubt, one of the leading theoreticians in the world. His ideas have remained in many openings, the Nimzo-Indian and King's-Indian defences, the Sicilian and the Queen's Gambit excepted, where one of the variations bears his name. The Breyer variation in the Ruy Lopez was effectively created and brought into use by Furman and Borisenko in the early 50s, and so in Soviet chess literature it is known as the Borisenko-Furman variation. In 1959, on returning from the USSR Championship, he showed us a game with Nezmetinov. In a position from the King's Indian that seemed to be highly tactical in nature, he dumbfounded us by a staggering move of the rook that highlighted his positional pluses. For a few moves, he strengthened his position further and went on to win in a direct attack against the Black King. A year later, the same manoeuvre was employed by Botvinnik in a similar position against Pacman in the European Team Championship in Oberhausen. These games and this specific manoeuvre led to the disappearance of this variation, which before was considered perfectly playable, from tournament play, forcing Black to seek new ways in one of the main variations of the King's Indian defence. Fuhrman's analyses and findings were global in character. He normally concerned himself with a concept rather than the discovery of a particular move that would change the evaluation from slightly better to equal or vice versa. White's entire concept of striving to control the centre with logic and clarity were characteristic of the Fuhrman style. His profound understanding of chess, in particular of the opening, and the abundance of his own ideas and findings made him a desirable advisor, second or sparring partner for many outstanding players. His services were often used by Botvinnik, who played a number of training games with him. He also helped Taimanov, Bronstein, Petrosian and Korchnoi at various stages of their chess careers. But in all these cases, he was working with an already developed high-class grandmaster. This work was largely consultative, bringing opening systems and variations up to the necessary mark, searching for new possibilities. All this changed when Fuhrman began working with Karpov. Tolya was then 17, and although he was already a master, and in spite of a rare combination of enormous talent, willpower and character, there was much in chess that he did not yet know. As observed Alla Fuhrman, when Sioma was helping Botvinnik or Petrosian, he would go away to work for a week, a fortnight or longer. But when Tolya appeared, he became everything. Can it be said that Tolya occupied a special place in his life? Certainly. Indisputably, he loved Tolya unreservedly. For all these 10 years, they were inseparable. When Sioma passed away, Tolya said that during the last 10 years, Sioma had spent more time with him than with me. This was true. There were endless preparations, training sessions, tournaments, trips away. He was not with his family, with his son, with me, but with Tolya. In the teenage Karpov, he saw what he himself had lacked in chess, and to him, he passed on everything that he knew about the game. In a way, the rapidly mounting successes of Karpov were a self-reflection in chess of Fuhrman himself. For Anatoly Karpov, their first meeting is etched in his memory. It is easy to establish the day when I first saw Semyon Abramovich. It was immediately after the 18th game of the Botvinnik-Petrosian match in May 1963. Fuhrman, who was then helping Botvinnik, advised him in this game, which was adjourned, to make a draw. But Botvinnik, thinking that he stood better, began playing for a win and lost. Angered, he sent Fuhrman to read some lectures at a Trud training session on the outskirts of Moscow, which I was attending. I was then not quite 12 years old. We began working together in the autumn of 1968, when, after first entering Moscow University, I moved to Leningrad, where Fuhrman was living. This was essentially the reason for my moving, the possibility of constant lessons and regular contact with him. There is no doubt that in my moulding as a chess player, Fuhrman played a decisive role. It was not even that he was a universal theory expert. He had a mass of his own ideas, and he generated ideas, especially with white. He also played better with white by an order of magnitude, or perhaps even two, than with black. He had a wonderful feeling for position. During analysis, he immediately saw the main line, and he very much liked space. But he was also incredibly stubborn. In general, this is not bad. Stubbornness in analysis is something I even like, but with him, it sometimes went to ridiculous lengths. On the other hand, it sometimes managed to save variations that were under terrible threat. Initially, he seemed to be a placid person, but then I saw in him a great inner energy, which expressed itself not only in chess. He was also an inveterate card player, and every autumn he went looking for mushrooms, and he knew where to find them. Another ritual was feeding fish in an aquarium, together with his son. I even remember these fish, and their name has remained in my memory, guppy, although I myself was never interested in them. No, there were no arguments, although there was a lack of understanding when, because of his cards, I did not win the USSR championship in Leningrad in 1971. I had the advantage in a highly important adjourned game with Savin, a considerable advantage. But Sioma played cards with Levitna until 5 in the morning, and then effectively, without analysing, suggested a plan. I took his advice, and I was glad to get away with a draw.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. DGT designs, develops, manufactures, and distributes an extensive range of chess products worldwide. Recognized as the global market leader in chess equipment, DGT's products are available through retailers in over 120 countries, catering to a variety of markets. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
Semyon Abramovich Furman gave the impression of being a calm, even phlegmatic person. In an early photo in 1948, he looks more like a broker on the New York Stock Exchange in the 30s or a Hollywood actor playing gangster roles. But when I got to know him, Sioma had more the appearance of a university lecturer or the chief accountant of a building firm. He was a taciturn man. In chess circles, the following sentence of his became famous. "You ask the questions." This is what he had said when his future wife, on their first acquaintance, inquired as to the reason for his silence. He spoke slowly, with a slight burr, and his movements were measured. He would unhurriedly move the pieces on the board, slowly reach for the clock button, take out a cigarette, turn on his lighter, adjust his spectacles. But this appearance was deceptive. If it is true that the character of every person corresponds to some definitive age, Sioma's age was somewhere between 20 and 30. Those who were closely acquainted with him knew that the distinguishing feature of his nature was passion. Passion which became apparent in everything he did, whether it was playing cards, picking mushrooms, fishing, or listening to foreign radio stations. Passion, and not far away from it on the scale of emotions, excitement and stubbornness, it goes without saying that his main passion was chess.
"You know, Alyona,"
Sioma said to his young wife,
"I don't know how I will be able to play chess from now on, because I love you more than chess, and I don't know how to combine these two loves."
His passion for chess, however, did not suffer, as Alla Furman told me.
"He studied chess all the time. He liked to use a pocket set, since we didn't have much room in the house. But even without a set, he was all the time thinking about chess. In the train, in the bus. I knew that look when he listened to and did not hear what I was saying to him. He was all wrapped up in chess."
On occasions, chess would also engage him at night. In 1963, the USSR championship in which Furman was playing took place in Leningrad. I went there almost every evening. In the fourth round, Furman played Kolmov, who in that tournament shared first place with Spassky and Stein. Ratmir Kolmov, a player of exceptional natural talent, was famed for his indifferent attitude to opening theory and his incredible tenacity in defence. However, that evening, it appeared that he would not manage to escape. It was Furman's position, a powerful centre, two bishops, and growing white pressure. But somehow, Furman's advantage gradually evaporated, and the game ended in a draw. When I managed to find my way into the participants' room, the analysis of the game had already ended. Sioma was sitting alone in a characteristic pose, propping up the back of his head with his hand. In the other was a smouldering cigarette.
"Did you have a big advantage, Semyon Abramovich?" I asked.
He looked sorrowfully at me and did not make any reply. It was evident that he had not yet switched off from the game. In a position where he felt he was winning, he had chosen the wrong plan. A few moves later, the game ended in a draw.
All night long, the feeling of an unfulfilled duty did not leave me,
Furman recalled the following day.
I dropped off only towards morning, and in my sleep I finally mated Kolmov.
To prove his story, he demonstrated a beautiful tactical combination that would have forced White's win. Even after our group had broken up and the lessons had ceased, I often met Furman at competitions or in the Shugorin Club. In 1964, in the Leningrad Championship, I managed to win against him in what was probably one of the best games I played in that period. Playing black, I realised that in a theoretical battle for equality, I had little chance. While we were still in the opening, I sacrificed the exchange on the 10th move. I had some initiative, and his king was forced to remain temporarily in the centre. It had been a correct decision, in particular from a psychological point of view. Because of his extensive knowledge and great opening erudition, bad or even inferior positions hardly ever occurred with him, and he played them less confidently. It seems to me that, for the same reason, the play of outstanding opening experts like Portish in the 60s and 70s and Kasparov in our time is also weaker in inferior or slightly inferior positions, relatively speaking, of course, compared with their play when there is mounting positional pressure, a complicated middle game, an attack with pieces or a technical ending. In 1966, I spent a period of active service in the ranks of the Soviet Army. Behind this official wording was concealed the reality of living at home, wearing uniform extremely rarely, and playing blitz and cards in the chess section of the officers' club. Sometimes this also meant playing in army competitions for the Leningrad Military District. On a sunny spring day in 1966, my soldier colleagues in the sports brigade, Mark Zeitlin, Orest Avakin, and I, received an order to help Furman, our trainer and club colleague, to move to a new flat. I can still picture the unpretentious furnishings, the chess books and the piles of bulletins which were issued for any decent tournament. When, by 1 o'clock, the operation was successfully completed, Sioma said, "This calls for a celebration." He invited us to the prestigious Moscow restaurant on the Nevsky Prospect. "What shall we drink, lads?" he asked. "Whatever you like, Semyon Abramovich," we replied. A litre of vodka during the meal was easily consumed, and Sioma kept up with us. In general, he did not mind the odd glass. He was a sociable person and well-disposed to everyone who was well-disposed to him. At 3 o'clock, when we were leaving the restaurant, the contented Sioma again thanked us for our help. We too were in an excellent mood, although it was still a long time to the evening. We had finished our day's work, and the Nevsky and our whole life lay before us. 6 months later, he became seriously ill. He was unable to complete a tournament and had to return to Leningrad. After losing about 40 pounds in weight during a month, Furman had to undergo a very serious operation. I myself was now working in the Shugorin Club, and I remember taking an official written request by the Chess Federation to various government bodies that Furman should be operated on by Melnikov, a leading light in oncology at that time. The operation was a success, and the illness retreated, in order to return 11 years later. But these 11 years became special ones in his life, because into them came Karpov.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast can be listened to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the New in Chess website. We thank our voice actor, Nick Murphy, our producer, Alex Pollock, and of course our sponsor, DGT, for their support, and hope to have you back soon for a new episode of the New in Chess podcast.